Bonk.
Hi.
How are you? What was just happening right before that? What the hell just happened there?
Razor.
Stop doing that. Razor. Razor. Quit. Is he just munching on his paw?
Yeah, he was trying to do it, and I was trying to silently tell him to stop. But that just looked like me gesturing, like just pointing wildly at him, just angrily pointing my finger at him.
Honestly, he's almost always doing something weird that he should stop doing. So, you know, I would never second guess it if you were angrily being like, quit doing that shit.
Dan very accurately described what goes on inside his mind is just total scrambled eggs. Cause like in the morning, Dan and I will be playing Puzzle Fight and Razor will just be like standing in the corner, making weird whiny noises for no reason.
Or just yelling at us.
Then we go to pet him and he'll just run out of the way and just like start violently humping the toy basket.
Yeah, he'll run up to me sometimes and do the cat thing where he like pushes against my legs and I'm like, oh, he wants some attention actually. Let me go down and pet him. And just like jump out of his skin and jump away. Like, what the fuck is with you?
Yeah, his brain is scrambled eggs and Gizmos is a soft boiled egg.
Yeah, just sitting in a bird's nest.
Yeah.
It's boy, they're really something. Hey.
Hey,
I got a question for you.
Lay it on me.
You and your relationship with soda cans.
What about it? I was hoping we wouldn't have to talk about this on the podcast.
Well, we're going to cover it here. It's that there are two weird things that you do with soda cans that I've never seen anyone do.
Okay.
One is always drinking half to 80% of them and then leaving them on counters or asking me to finish them.
I always ask you. I never leave it.
Oh, I've had times in our 7 years together, I've seen cans and been like, oh, is that mine or hers? And I'll pick it up and it'll be like warm and like 30% full. I was like, oh, that's Bonk's. And the second is you put straws in your Coke cans. You open up the can and then you put a straw in there. Why?
Because it's nice to just suck up and not have to like move your head around.
Well, then why don't you just pour it into a glass?
Because the glass is all open at the top, and I like straws. They're tiny little tunnels. So just
but you have giant ones. It's like this. It's like sticking up twice the length of the can there.
Well, I'm sorry I don't get petite little delicate straws, Dan. I'm sorry that you have such gentle straw sensibilities that you can't handle me sucking on a big straw.
Boy. Any size straw is weird with a Coke can, I think.
Is that strange?
I mean, hey, you do what you want to do. I'm just saying I've never seen anyone do it before.
Well, okay, you know what? I might agree with you. That is, it might be weird because, you know, Coke and Pepsi, all the major soda brands, and even the minor soda brands.
Sure, the RCs, your Tabs.
Yeah,
yes.
I think that they've done enough R&D to perfect the drinking experience as far as like the can is concerned. You know, you have that first initial sip that's super duper bubbly and it always... But when I introduce a straw into the equation, it will just like explode a lot of the time. Like I'll put the straw in, let's say to a freshly opened can of Coke, and all the soda will just bubble up at the top of the straw. It makes a total mess.
So why do you do it?
because I like drinking from straw.
It seems avoidable, this problem.
Have you never tried a straw? It's really
nice. Why don't you get a 2-liter and pour it into a glass? Straws are fine, but not with cans. They're with glasses or cups.
It's already in a cup. But this is a nitro cold brew can of coffee, so it wasn't very bubbly.
Is that good?
It's okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's fine. I like the occasional like weird bottled or canned coffee drink thing.
Yeah, I know. I really enjoy coffee, and I'll have a cup in the afternoon, but I think I definitely prefer like a cold coffee in the afternoon than a hot coffee. I'm going to start making a cold coffee in the morning for me in the afternoon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, is summertime typically like more of the iced coffee season?
I think so.
Okay. I want to get into that. I like iced coffee.
Yeah, we have that. I should start making those.
I would love to start having some iced coffees in the morning. I wanted to get nice enough out where I can have breakfast on the deck, sip on a coffee and eat some waffles or something.
That sounds really nice.
I've been getting up early doing my elliptical, you know, streams and stuff. That's been a lot of fun. It's been keeping me on there.
Yeah.
So it feels good.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're doing that. Can I share the story of how you came up with it?
Yeah, idea. I don't.
Well, it was just really funny to me because Dan and I were laying in bed and, you know, we were trying to go to sleep and we weren't like talking or anything like that. And we were kind of tossing and turning a little bit. And I think we both kind of got the sense that we were both awake, even though like at this point we'd probably been laying in bed for like 2 hours or so.
Yeah.
Just struggling to fall asleep. And then, like, out of nowhere, like, when I'm trying to turn my brain off so I could sleep, Dan's just like, I just had the greatest idea. And he's just like, I'm going to do this morning exercise stream or whatever. And I was like, yeah, it's an awesome idea. And then I think later you came up with the idea for the name.
Oh, because I was just going to do Miyamoto stuff at first, and so I said Miyamotivation.
And it's
I was
not like, called that anymore?
Well, no, because originally I was like, well, maybe I'll play through all of Miyamoto's games, and that's like the gimmick I'll do, or I'll just do like Mario games or something. But then like I played Mario World, and I 100%ed it, and it was a lot of fun, but it was like I beat Mario World a bajillion times, you know? Sure. And while I really enjoyed that, and it got me working out every day, I was like, wait, that new Kirby game would be perfect for, you know, it's on Switch, so I can still have my hands separated and not like the normal controller. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't played it, and I probably wouldn't sit down and play it normally. So it was like, oh, this would actually be perfect. And it has been. I've actually like enjoyed that more because it's like I haven't, you know, I'm not just going through the motions like in Mario World. Mario World I enjoy, but it's like I've just done it so much. It's like, it is like I could do it in my sleep, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Kirby, it actually like kind of like activates my brain in a way where it's like I don't know what's coming next, and it like makes the time on the elliptical go faster and everything. You know what I mean?
And you don't find that the elliptical impedes your ability to play it?
Well, no, because Kirby is like the perfect level of just like, look, this is not a super difficult game. I don't know.
Despite, I saw people comparing it to Elden Ring.
You saw Ben Hansen saying that, and Ben Hansen's insane. So we'll see. I died in the boss fight today, so I think it's the right level of difficult for what I'm trying to do, but we'll see. I mean, probably not a thing I'll be doing for the rest of my life, but for right now, it's good at getting me back into that working out habit, and you know, I've lost some pounds so far. I'm eating better. It's
feeling good. I found that if you start your day off on the right foot, then you're much more likely to make healthy choices throughout the entire day.
Totally. Yeah. And doing that first thing in the morning is excellent.
Similarly, like if I have a really sloppy breakfast, I'm probably going to just eat like a jerk for the rest of the day. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like, oh, today's a wash.
Yeah. Who really cares? You know?
Yep. Yep. I know what you mean.
It's simple science.
There we go. What kind of simple, Monk?
Blood simple.
Oh, you know, that makes me think of, we just watched that Coen Brothers directorial debut.
Yeah, it's a huge coincidence. It has the same name as what I just said, Blood Simple. That's the name of the movie.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Coen Brothers.
How about those guys?
We had not seen this, Blood Simple, 1984. And then we saw it was the Coen Brothers directorial debut, and it was Frances McDormand's on-screen debut.
She looks like a literal child in this film.
It's crazy, yeah, because I always picture Frances McDormand as like kind of this like almost like motherly or older woman, you know.
Raising Arizona wasn't too long after this, right? Was that early 90s?
Was she in that?
Oh, yeah. She played like a friend or something. Like
was she? Because Holly Hunter was the
friend.
Okay.
But I even remember her kind of being like an aunt-like figure in that movie. And in this movie, it's just shocking to see her look so doe-eyed and like fresh-faced. You know what I mean? Not that like, she ever looks haggard or anything like that, but you know what I mean? Just like still has that baby fat on her face.
Totally. For like her debut, she was awesome in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. She carried the whole movie. It's fantastic.
Oh, which I'll just say, this movie aged incredibly well, I think. There is nothing about it that feels outside of like obvious stuff like age, like Frances McDormand's age, and like, you know, like you can tell
all the actors, not just her.
Right. Well, she's the main one. It's like, yes, Dan Hedaya and John Getz and all. John Getz did? I don't know. John Getz from The Fly also.
Since gotten older since the making of this film.
Yes, as it's crazy that they all across the board, even the whole crew and everyone involved with the film has aged the exact same amount of time.
None is immune from the cruel mistress of time.
It's true. I was a baby. When did this come out? I was a 3 or 4 month old baby when this came out.
Oh, I was 7 years non-existent.
Yeah, you were. What do they say, a twinkle in the eye or something? Yes. Before someone's born, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's 1984, and it's just crazy how, like, I feel like this story, when I say it's aged perfectly, it's like there's really nothing dated about it other than the fact that you recognize these actors looking younger and, you know, the film quality and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, there's some very lo-fi photoshopping going on.
Yes, I guess that's the only tech thing, you know, because I wasn't really thinking about, you know, cell phones or anything during this. It all just like, it just seems like small town bar locations, kind of farmland and stuff like that. And I just feel like it just feels fresh. Like nothing aged poorly for me.
No, I mean, it's a timeless story of a woman in a love triangle situation. Or is it still a triangle if it's just It just takes the one person that's screwing around with two different people for it to be
triangle. I think that's a love triangle. When three people are involved, I think it's typically a love triangle.
Okay, it's not like one person involved with two people, and then one of the other two people is involved with both of them, and then
I don't think that seems like that would happen less frequently. I would think confusing. Yes, yeah. I think when three people are involved, yeah.
Yeah, it seems to be set in like a small town, Texas. I feel like 90% of the scenes are at nighttime.
A lot of nighttime, roads, motels. I think the Coen brothers love motels. Mm-hmm. You remember like Intolerable Cruelty? We covered that for this podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big scene there. No Country for Old Men. There's a lot of like roadside motels. I feel like Raising Arizona even.
There's something very like romantic and kind of creepy about hotels, especially like roadside motels.
Yes. Yes.
Like the ones where you open the door and it's just outside. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you could see the, like in the movie, how you could see the cars from the highway reflecting on the walls. You know what I mean? The
yeah.
There's something I kind of agree with that. Like, I find it so interesting that it's just like, here's a space that you rent to be comfy for the night. I find that so appealing.
Well, and it makes you think of just like, you know, the type of people who frequent it must be people who are like driving all night and they're like, oh, I can just pull over to the side of the road and find a bed real quick and then get right back on the road,
sure,
you know?
Utility, yeah.
Yeah. It's not families on vacation. Well, I guess when my dad goes on vacation, he usually finds the cheapest possible roadside motel to save $5. And he's like, why are there cockroaches here? And I think I'm going to get stabbed. And it's like, well, because you've got the cheapest fucking hotel in New Jersey. Like, Jesus Christ. But anywho.
You know what I was just thinking? We were talking about like how this movie is timeless. One thing I was like, can you imagine how much easier a private investigator's job has gotten since like the internet is as ubiquitous as it is?
Oh my God. Instead of like sitting around in cars for like 24 hours waiting for someone to leave a house?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they do that as well. But like, you know, just finding information. There's so much information online. And I feel like most people aren't really privy to the extent to which their information is available.
Oh, right, right.
You can find out so much about a person, you know, it's probably made and their relationships and their connections. And like, you know, it's probably made the job exponentially easier.
And it's probably required a whole different set of skills to get good at
it,
you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Where it's like, I wonder if, you know, it was more kind of like bounty hunter types that in case things came to a scrap or whatever, you had to be, you know, willing to get physical or whatever mm-hmm. back then. But now it's like, well, you need to be kind of a computer nerd, you know, in a way, you know?
Yeah, I forgot what, I feel shitty for not remembering the podcast. It was so long ago. I was listening to a podcast that had this woman who was a bounty hunter on it. And she was talking about how she, it was essentially this like paid, software as a service, whatever, where like you can put in someone's name and find all their property records, like their last known address, like really detailed stuff mm-hmm. that you can find, you know, without, it's usually behind a paywall. You
sure.
know? Like
yeah.
there are services that you could just pay and know all that stuff. So yeah, it's probably transformed a lot. Maybe it's not easier, but I'm sure it's certainly transformed quite a bit.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty much at the heart of this movie is mm-hmm. this private investigator and this love triangle, because, so we got this guy Visser, who is the private investigator. And he is helping out. He was hired by Marty, who is Dan Hedaya. If you don't recognize the name, he's been in a million things. For some reason, my head goes to Baby's Day Out. I don't know if you've seen that.
No.
For some reason, Dan Hedaya and Baby's Day Out, even though I've probably seen him in 40 movies. That's what I think of. So basically, he is a massive asshole in this. Dan Hedaya, he plays Marty, a bar owner.
Yeah, everyone, it's hard to redeem anyone in this movie. Everyone is kind of an asshole in their own way.
I would say Marty, massive asshole. Ray, who is the guy who's cheating with Marty's wife, mm-hmm. He's a huge dumbass.
And also an asshole.
And then Abby, the wife, is cheating as well. So like,
kind of sucks too.
Everyone's kind of doing their own shady stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting how like Visser, who I didn't realize this, but I guess his name is never actually mentioned in the movie at all.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But when he's introduced, he's such like a weaselly, like you just don't trust him at all. He's mm-hmm. slimy. And he kind of comes across as a big idiot.
Yes.
Even though he does the work that was asked of him. So when he does end up kind of framing Abby and weaving this complicated tale, it catches you off guard because he ends up being the ultimate villain, but you don't expect as much from him because he's such a dum-dum.
Yeah, it's like at a certain point, you know, I'm jumping ahead here, but Marty dies and there's still a good amount of movie mm-hmm. left. And it's just like, wait a minute. So I guess, yeah, the main threat here is Visser, this private investigator.
Yeah.
Because like it's just this, I love this where it's a small story of just like basically these four characters are intertwined and like everyone's distrusting everyone and everyone's got their motives and everything. And like, you know, Visser, the private investigator, gets way more kind of personally involved with this thing than you would expect. The way they get there is really cool and very, very smart, I think.
And very Coen Brothers. Like, after we've seen a few of them, they tend to, like, weave this really complicated story where it's built on, like, a lot of misunderstandings and misdirections and framing situations, you know what I mean? Like, it's never exactly what meets the eye with Coen Brothers. And I think, you know, seeing this in Big Lebowski, too, as just another example, I think that at a certain point with Coen Brothers movies, at least these, like, obviously there are exceptions. We talked about Intolerable Cruelty and I think No Country for Old Men. But I think with these really complicated movies, it's less about the plot and more about the characters. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, whether or not you follow what's going on, not that it's particularly hard to follow, but it's more just like a character study than like the actual, you know, ins and outs of what's going on.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure a lot of people, myself included, would call The Big Lebowski their favorite Coen movie. And, like, I don't think anybody would say that their favorite part is, like, the gripping tale of bunnies kidnapping, you know? It's like, no, that's the thing that, like, leads all these people together. But, no, it's Walter, it's Donnie, it's the dude, it's, you know, it's those conversations at the bowling alley and Jesus and all that stuff. Like, it has nothing to do with, like, oh, and then you can believe it when they cut off her toe. Yeah, and it's like, no.
Plot doesn't really matter at all.
Yeah, not at all. Which, they're just incredible at crafting these really memorable characters and casting them perfectly.
Oh yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, for sure.
This is closer to like a Fargo, I would say, than anything else they've done.
It is, you know? Really dark, and there was a similar, I was thinking about Fargo when obviously the bounty hunter or the private investigator was introduced, but also during like a body disposal scene.
Yeah, I thought of that too, because the wood chipper in Fargo, and then the incinerator in this.
Yeah.
Which they never wound up using. They threw some clothes in there, right?
Some clothes, but yeah, I thought I was going to witness a body being burned, but no.
No, just buried alive.
Just buried alive. Yeah, that was, I was going to say, like, that's so brutal to see. Like, why not just kill him? You know what I mean?
And the way, well, that's the thing is, like, Ray kind of seems like a coward here, too.
Yeah,
like
he's, for sure.
Because he panics, because at one point, so Visser shoots Marty. That's how Marty dies. Mm-hmm. And he shoots him with Abby's gun.
To kind of frame her for the murder.
Yeah, which that kind of does, at first I thought Ray was being a massive idiot where he walks in and sees Marty dead and he starts like cleaning up all the evidence and everything, and my original thought was like, holy shit, in this situation I would just go to the cops and be like, hey, this shit looks really bad, but I'm telling you it wasn't me, I walked in, I saw this. But then I realized, like, oh, he saw his wife's gun, saw his girlfriend's gun, assumed Abby did the killing, and then thought like, oh shit, I have to clean this up.
Exactly.
But he even does that dumb too, even if he assumed Abby killed him, because like, for he's sure. Throws him in the car and everything, and he's just sloppy with everything, leaving blood everywhere. He's like dragging a body while a semi truck is going by, panicking and like taking off when the body starts moving, and then deciding to go like, oh, should I run him over? Oh, but maybe I'll hit him with a shovel. No, I can't do that. Like, he's indecisive and can't like commit to anything. Yeah. And then fucking buries him, like you said, just shoot him or something. Yeah. You know, no, he just like fucking panic buries him in the dirt.
And that's, I can't imagine a worse way to die than to be buried alive.
It's way up there on the absolute worst. And the way they shot it, where it's like you can see the breathing, mm-hmm. like you can see the dirt kind of moving up and down. It's fucking crazy.
It's really disturbing. And as far as like disturbing visuals, I mean, there's a shootout at the end, but like this movie, it's not like that was, I feel like, the darkest point of it. Like, obviously mm-hmm. the themes are all dark, but like that was the peak, like, oh shit for me. Like, that was so disturbing. I just hate seeing that. I'd rather see someone get sawed apart or whatever, brutalized in whatever way, than to watch someone get buried alive. Like, I don't have claustrophobia or anything, but I was thinking about that scene in Kill Bill where Beatrice gets like put in the coffin under the underground,
and you can, like, see it from her like perspective down there. Yeah,
so crazy.
Yeah, does she punch through? Yeah. Like, she like repeatedly like punches. Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about that during the burial scene too, because it's been so long since I've seen Kill Bill, and it's like, oh man, I wonder how it holds up. Like, in my mind, it probably holds up great, and it's just like my favorite form of Tarantino, just super stylish and cool and like kind of just fun, evocative of like old, you know, action movies and stuff, and revenge tales and stuff. Like, I would assume it holds up.
Yeah, it does. I watched it when we were in San Francisco. I watched the whole thing. Yeah, it's a phenomenal movie. I love it so much. It's so epic.
I love the dialogue. I remember loving that last scene with David Carradine before the heart punch thing and all that. Like, that was awesome, I thought.
And I just love the simplicity, too, of like, here's a list of people and I'm going to kill every single mm-hmm. one of them. And there's mm-hmm. a journey to get to every one of them. Yeah.
But they're all like themed and have their own boss fights and stuff. It's just like, I mean, it's straight up like a video game. It's like there's the fight with all the people at the end of the first one. It's just straight up like Devil May Cry fight. Mm-hmm. Ah, fuck this movie. Really, really good.
Yeah, great movie.
Yep. I did love the pictures, the family photos of Dan Hedaya and Frances McDormand on the walls of them just like smiling and like hitting beach balls or smiling whatever.
The sun, yeah, like the exact opposite of what you're seeing now. They just seem so miserable.
It just weirded me out even seeing Dan Hedaya smile. Yeah. I feel like I've never seen that before.
Yeah, he's got one of those faces that's like you can't even imagine it not grimacing.
Well, I feel like he always plays an asshole. I'm pulling up his filmography here. Okay, he's alive. He's 81. Because you recognize him and stuff, right?
Vaguely. I mean, he looks a little familiar, but I could not for the life of me place him in any other movie.
Oh, he's the bad guy in Commando, of course. Why didn't I think of that? He's not Bennett, but he's the rich asshole. He gets shot with a shotgun in Commando. Adam's Family, Rookie of the Year, Clueless. I think he's the dad in Clueless.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Daylight, Alien Resurrection. Yep, seen all these. Night of the Roxbury, Hurricane, Shaft. Yeah, okay, so he's been in a whole lot of stuff. Looks like he still is. As of 2021, he was in two movies. So, yeah. But he's great. He's awesome here. It took me a while to realize, well, it wasn't until I looked at his name, that John Getz, the guy who plays Ray here, is the same guy from The Fly, who was like the asshole boss. That's kind of
that's what you mentioned.
Kind of makes
a
turn at the end, you know? It's like, he looks totally different in both, though.
Does he? I don't even remember what he looked like in that
movie. I think in The Fly, he had a darker beard and mustache.
Oh!
In this one, he just had kind of like
that's
lighter.
Why.
Yeah. He looked totally different in The Fly.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, which that one's great. I did like the payphone by the side of the road. You mentioned the hotels. It just made me think man, payphones are gone now, and I'll never get that experience that you always see in movies from the 90s where it was like dusty highway and you're just sitting there on a payphone.
Yeah, I used to, when my friend and I would go to the mall when we were kids, this was before the days of cell phones, we would call with the payphone to be picked up, and we'd have to like scrap together coins and stuff. Like we'd go around and be like, "Hey, do you have a dime? Do you have a nickel? Do you have a quarter?" Try to get money for the payphone to call my mom to pick us up.
Yeah. Remember that at the swimming pool all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, with the weird sex hotlines.
Oh, of course, yes. Well, I didn't pay for it. I just heard the intro. Just okay. Now I'm gonna go back to the pool and think about that later. Yes.
Store it in the memory bank.
Yep. Not here. I like the sad piano theme in this movie.
Oh, Dan, I was just going to say that.
Really? It's really good.
It's so nice. It's very appropriate. It's subtle. And whenever it pops up, it always feels like an earned moment of somber piano reflection. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was like there's a real atmosphere to this movie. It's not constantly blasting you with music. So whenever that piano does pop up, it just does really set the mood really well, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, this movie isn't like aggressive in any way at all. It's very subtle and it's you know, classic noir. I feel like very, like you said earlier, very small story with just these four characters and stuff. And it's always interesting to because you know, the smaller the story, I feel like the more the characters themselves get to kind of breathe and stuff. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's interesting what a face turn Abby kind of has throughout it. I mean, you kind of feel a little bit bad for her because it's like, yeah, it's really shitty that she cheated on her husband. But again, Marty seems like a fucking asshole. Mm-hmm. And then he wants them dead because she cheated, which is a little much.
Everyone sucks here.
Yeah, everyone sucks.
Well, and since it is such a small story, it's like when it gets violent, I feel like it has impact. Like we talked about the burial thing before. And then Ray gets shot through the head at the end here. I love the end. They're in this like cool loft. Like they make it seem like Abby is like getting this place that's like a trashy place. Yeah. Like, I don't know, this looks like it a looks fucking really sweet cool. loft. Yeah. Like you need to get some decoration here. I know she's just like sleeping on a bed basically to escape. But like they make it seem like, oh, there's just junkies here and it's this shitty thing. Like, this looks fucking great.
Well, yeah, but that's another example of the recurring theme of this movie, which is like lack of curtains. Like, I feel like so much of this movie could be avoided, like all the problems in this movie, if they just had decent curtains.
Yeah, taking pictures through windows and getting sniped through windows.
Giant windows in the nighttime, no obscuring whatsoever, yeah.
Well, yeah, because Ray initially is like, hey, you need to turn the lights off here, and she doesn't do it, and so he just gets sniped. Did he get sniped through the head?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and it's Visser on like a neighboring rooftop. Mm. And I loved this part where Abby takes cover and she knows that there's a sniper, like someone's looking down the scope, and she's taking like shoes and throwing it at this exposed light bulb to try to like shut the light. I thought that was such a cool little detail, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And like, so talking about how it's just brutal when there is violence. So Ray gets shot, and then this last thing with Visser, when Visser's going after her, it's this weird thing where it's like, is she in the bathroom and he's like in the neighboring like living room area or something?
Well, so she hides in the bathroom when after he snipes Ray, and then she shuts the lights off. Like he crosses the street or whatever and just enters the building, and you could kind of hear like the Mr. X style footsteps in the background, and she hides in the bathroom, and then as she's approaching, she sees the open window, but it's too steep for her to jump down. So she, like, I guess it doesn't show it, but she shimmies to the bathroom next door.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So then he's in her bathroom and he, like, she's able to stab his hand through the window,
which is brutal because, like, she's like stabs his hand into the wood, so basically, he can't move it, yeah. And he's like struggling to move, but he can't even see it. He's like awkwardly, mm-hmm. like, it must have been the most uncomfortable thing, just the obvious pain. And also, he's just kind of pinned in this awkward look, like, thing here. Yeah. But he's trying to shoot through the wall at her. And I love these shots of, like, just seeing her terrified. And then you see the wall with, like, these holes with the light coming through, and, like, oh, fuck, this is scary. And then is that when she goes around to, like, she's going to go around and try to shoot him, basically.
Yeah, I guess she waits for him to use up all his ammo. And then he ultimately is able to pull the knife out, and as he's leaving the bathroom, she shoots him.
Yeah, and she says, like, I'm not afraid of you, Marty. Yeah. And he says, well, ma'am, if I see him, I'll be sure to give him the message.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
Yeah, and that just shows, like, what a complicated and confusing story it was for them, like, how no one really knew what was going on or knew the full picture. Like, we were really the only ones that knew the full picture.
I don't even think she had ever seen or heard of Visser at this point.
Yeah, because, like, when she goes in the bathroom and expects to see Marty dead, she's going to see this other guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you mentioned it earlier how subtle the violence is and how restrained it is. It's interesting how the Coen brothers kind of do that across all their movies. Like, they're so, they use violence so conservatively, but when they do, it's always so powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And No Country for Old Men, my mind goes there because that is such a violent movie, but, like, it bubbles up in bursts, you know what I mean, of extreme violence.
And it's so matter of fact, like, uh-huh. when you use the cow thing, it's like, dunk, it's just like, it's not like this big Hollywood yeah. thing, it's like, dunk, and the person just falls, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah. It's really just, yeah, it's not, they don't make big fanfare out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
yep. God, love the Coen brothers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as Coen brothers fans, being able to go back to this is awesome and see kind of where they got their start, because it's all there, mm-hmm. you know, all the parts of, you know, what you associate with the Coen brothers,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I really liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal little story. Yeah, it was great.
Big thumbs up. Check it out. We watched it on HBO Max, uh-huh. I want to say. Yep. All righty. Now is the part where I would usually thank all the patrons, but right now I want to thank everyone who has ever listened to this podcast or supported us in any way. If you've ever told a friend, listen to yourself, you know, come and gone, you know, cherry picked episodes, we're a patron in any way. If you have supported this podcast, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes. And so, with that, you're probably wondering why I'm giving that preamble. It is because we are ending the podcast. We are at the end of Panning the Stream. Next week will be our final episode. And I think we're going to go out with My Hero Academia yeah. Season 5. It is something that people have asked about a lot. It's our most popular episodes. We covered seasons 1 through 4. And so, yeah, we're going to go out with that. And you might ask why it's ending. And it has nothing to do with any employer, anything like that. No one made this decision for us. This was 100% us. And it's kind of comes down to the fact that, like, we love watching movies together. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've done 200 and whatever, you know, number of episodes we've done here. But there is something about being able to just watch stuff for us and not have to, like, you know, have it, like, for me, I always have, you know, the iPad out and I'm taking notes and stuff like that. And, you know, having a podcast where we talk about this stuff kind of dictates what we watch, where it's like, you know, oh, we might want to watch this movie again that we've seen before, but we couldn't really do a podcast on that. So why don't we do this for the podcast instead? So we kind of just want to go back to having, like, just weekly kind of date night, movie night type yeah. situations where we're just watching for us and we don't have to worry about, you know, it's for us rather than content, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. We were talking about, like, well, what's the favorite part of the podcast for us? And it's always just actually, like, having an excuse to sit together and watch something. And for me, you know, as I'm getting older and stuff, I don't feel like it's necessary for my opinion on everything I watch to be out there and available. And I'll due respect to people who are, you know, like Dan is, you know, you have your Fire Escape and your shows and you're an outward facing person. Like, as I kind of want to step back and not be as, you know, not be as opinionated and out there about things like that. And, I just think, like, we've had such a good run with this podcast mm-hmm. and it's been such a great time, and we've watched things we never would have watched before, and the community has been so amazing. And I just feel like, you know, instead of kind of teetering out, it's just best to step away while we're still feeling mm-hmm. good about it. And, you know, our experience was 100% positive, I feel like.
Oh my God. Yeah. We never missed a week. And like you said, you know, so many things we wouldn't have watched if it wasn't for recommendations or, like, oh, maybe this would be interesting for the podcast. Let's check it out. But, you know, a good example on the other side is, like, I think we started talking about this or thinking about this because, like Russian Doll is a mm-hmm. good example, where it's like, you know, we watched 7 episodes of Russian Doll season 2. And if you listened to that last week's episode, you probably know that we weren't super hot on it. And that's the type of thing where it's like, you know, a few episodes in, if we were just watching this for us, we probably would have just like stopped watching it and moved on and watched something else on our movie night or whatever. But there is kind of that like, oh, well, you know, we got to finish this and do an episode about it. It's kind of a new show. And it's, I don't know, like you were saying, I've got a lot of stuff where I'm going on, you know, streams and podcasts and letting my opinion be known. That is what my career is at this point. But you've never really been one to want to put yourself out there to that. Like, you know, you tried the streaming stuff a little bit with me and that's not really for you. And, you know, we've obviously done this for over 4 years. So, yeah. You know, you've, you know, had some experience with it, but that's not your career path is being a front, you know, front facing, public facing, yeah, you know, opinion haver, you know?
And that the thing too, is like, it was never like the having the podcast was never about that for me. Like I always forget that people even listen to this, you know what I mean? It's always just been me and you hashing out our thoughts on the movie, but because like, that's what it's like to me, you know, I'd rather just take away that one formality of it and just kind of make our lives a little simpler and just, you know, I feel like we're still going to be able to enjoy films and movies, but it'll just be like in a different way now. And it'll,
we'll over breakfast the next day, we'll kind of talk about our thoughts, or, you know, like right after the movie or something on the couch, we can talk about it and not have to do the like, oh, save it for the podcast. Yeah. You know, it's a more natural, you know, it's always been something that I've tried to keep in my mind of like, you know, I do so much stuff as far as like content and things like that, that I have always drawn certain lines where it's like, okay, well, this is just, you know, this is for me and you, or this is just a moment with me. This is the night where I'm just going out with my dad and we're just going to, you know, catch up or whatever. This isn't for content, stuff like that. And I think it's just healthy to kind of like bring that to a, you know, continue evaluating that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think to just have this as our thing where we're movie fans, we're TV fans, and we'll just watch it as a couple and talk about it as a couple. You know, without the need to do a podcast on it. So, like you said, it's been positive the entire time.
Yeah,
so.
If I may, I mean, we started this podcast in 2018 when we were living in New York.
Yep.
And at that point, you know, I never talked into a microphone before. And Dan had, obviously, he's very experienced. But I feel like I have personally grown a lot from this podcast, just in just being able to talk about like maybe abstract or complicated ideas. And as anyone who listens to the show knows, I tend to just kind of come up with things as I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I don't like have like well researched or well thought out ideas that I'm presenting on the podcast. But in just doing that every week, it's kind of helped me be able to articulate ideas, even though I'm not, you know, I kind of just like lay the ground as I'm walking on it, you know,
yeah, yeah.
And it's been extremely helpful. Like I feel like I see that effect when I'm in meetings or something and someone asks me something, I'm just able to immediately start answering them confidently without being like, okay, I need a minute to prepare myself. You know what I mean? This podcast has made me so much more confident in who I am. And it's been such a huge positive force in my entire life. You know, I mentioned earlier how Dan and I have watched so many things that we wouldn't ordinarily and how it's enriched us that way. And, you know, obviously this community has been amazing. So I don't want anyone to think that we don't appreciate you guys or this podcast has given us so much joy and positivity. And I feel like I've personally grown a lot from it. So just thank you everyone for listening.
Yeah.
I really, really appreciate it. It feels really good.
Yeah. And speaking of the community, we want to assure everyone that we're going to make good on all the Patreon stuff. So basically if you are a monthly, excuse me, Jesus. If you are a monthly Patreon subscriber, the $5 a month thing, we, as of this recording, paused payment. So you will not be charged for May 2022. So basically you got, you know, all the April stuff is, you know, you got all the benefits there. And then we will not charge for May. And if you're one of the handful that did the year up front, there is an option on Patreon where you can do a refund, kind of like a prorated type thing, and you'll get refunded for the ones that you didn't get. So thank you all for anyone who supported us in that way. And if you were supporting and using the Discord access, you know that's a shared thing between Panning the Stream patrons and my Twitch subscribers. So if you want to stay in the Discord, you can just go to twitch.tv/Dan Reichert, throw your $5 a month sub over there, and you will be able to remain in the Discord as a Twitch subscriber.
Yeah,
so that's all to say. Thank you all so much. Honestly, this has been, you know, for all the reasons that we've gone on about, an incredibly, it's been a fun journey, and it's been very rewarding. And thank you to everyone who's ever written in or listened or suggested anything. It's been a blast. And yeah, we'll go out. So that'll be the big goodbye explanation there. Mm-hmm. Next week, we'll just come in with My Hero Academia Season 5. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to cram 25 episodes into the next week. We'll see how that goes. And then we'll try to just kind of cover the whole season and send the podcast off into the sunset.
Yeah. And I have quite a few bonkus to get through.
Yes.
So there's going to be a little bit of a bonku blowout at the end.
There, yes. So. Speaking of, yes, needing to make good on all the Patreon stuff, you will get your bonku. Absolutely. So,
and I have a bonku today if you'd like to hear it.
Oh, absolutely. Bonk, what do we got?
This bonku is for listener Daniel.
Oh.
Not you.
Oh, okay.
It's another Daniel out there, but please feel free to imagine this is for
you. Well, it depends on the content, but let's see.
Okay.
Okay.
Cavernous boardroom. Daniel was alone in there, alone in the crowd.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, at first I liked the idea of like, oh, I'm in a boardroom. Maybe I'm a big, high-powered bigwig there. But then the loneliness, especially when he said there's a crowd, that makes me think that like even in this position of power, he feels truly alone.
You're just holding out your business card and no one's taking it. Everyone's talking among themselves and no one's taking your business card. And you're just standing there like a sap with your business card out.
This just feels like a scene from American Psycho. Not two. No, not two. Probably the good one. The good one, yes.
American Psycho colon, the good one.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, Daniel, thank you for your patronage. And like Bonk said, there will be a Bonku blowout next week on our final episode of Panning the Stream. Bonk, thank you for joining me each and every week.
Oh, thank you, Daniel.
All right, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.